Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in. My name is Brian McCormick and I'm going to be talking with you a little bit about VR services today, commonly known as vocational rehabilitation services. And so what I'll be talking about is a little about my background so you can get a feel for how I got involved in VR services and what I do now for VR, a little bit about VR's mission, how the eligibility process works, services that are provided, and also funding and how people are eligible for funding. And at the very end, I'll give you a little bit of a case study so that we can tie all those concepts together and you can see how it works in a real-life situation. So just to give you a little bit about my background, I received VR services after spinal cord injury in 2001. So VR helped me out a lot with establishing career goals and having the right tools and education and services to be able to reach my career goal. And I'll talk about that in a lot more detail as I move forward. I have a background in rehabilitation counseling from the University of Pittsburgh, and I've been working for the state of Pennsylvania in our VR program for about 8 years now. Some of the services that I provide are liaison to the Center for Assistive Technology, which is a seating and mobility clinic, among many other things. They provide all different sorts of assistive technology as far as, you know, adaptive driving, augmented communication, audiology, or computer access technology. So that is one of the main sites that I get referrals. I also am a liaison at UPMC Mercy on the spinal cord unit, so I work with quite a number of individuals who have, you know, acquired SCI over the years. I am also the assistive technology specialist for my office, so any counselor that needs to make a referral for a wheelchair evaluation or for computer access technology, they will usually send those referrals to me and I can coordinate everything for the office and for the sites such as the Center for Assistive Technology. Okay, so I think one of the first things that I'd like to talk about is the history of VR services, really how they were established. And so, like many other things, VR services actually have their history in, you know, past wars. The first one really was the First World War. There were new advances in the medical field, and a lot of people now were surviving wars. And so you have individuals that maybe have acquired spinal cord injury or an amputation or another trauma, and now with the advances of medicine, they're now surviving these injuries. And now that they're surviving these injuries, these individuals now want to be, you know, part of society. They want to get back to the lives that they had before or get back to, you know, a new life with maybe some new training to start a different job and re-enter the workforce. So there definitely are a lot of different, you know, acts and legislation and policy out there, but just a couple that I wanted to highlight were some like the Smith-Hughes Act. So these are all right around the time of the First World War. And these really established a lot of services for veterans. And early on, these services were primary for veterans. Eventually, it transitioned into the civilian world. So the services that we provide, you know, for, you know, VR, a lot of it is for civilians. We do serve some veterans, but eventually, you know, things split off to the point where you have the Veterans Administration that provided the VR for the veterans, and now you have, you know, VR, which serves predominantly, I would say, probably the civilian population, but also will supplement some services that are not provided by the VA. So another one is the Soldiers Rehabilitation Act of 1918 that established some additional funds for rehabilitation for disabled veterans. The Veterans Bureau was established in 1921, and then you have the Disabled Veterans Act of 1943. So all of these acts were very, very instrumental in setting the foundation for VR services, and it's really how we got our start, and it's been going strong ever since. So what's VR's mission? So at the very core of what we do is we provide career counseling and guidance to help people gain and maintain employment. So I say gain and maintain because we work with individuals who have never worked before. We work with a lot of high school individuals. We work with individuals who may have worked, but maybe due to a new diagnosis or an injury are no longer able to keep working at that current job. Or maybe they have a job and they have a new diagnosis or something has changed in their medical situation that they need some additional services to maintain that job. And so this is at the very core of what we do. And as I mentioned, we do this through career counseling and guidance. So we provide a lot of career exploration, and we want to provide career options to individuals. That's really a big thing that VR provides is options for people so they can make informed choices about where they're going and what they want to do with their career. So for an individual that has maybe never worked before, we might sit down and talk with them about what jobs they might like to do. Do they want to go into business? Do they want to go into medicine? Or, you know, maybe in a specific field, do they want to be a doctor? Or do they want to be a physical therapist? Or do they want to go into radiology? So we try and help them think about different options that are out there so that they can make an informed choice. It's really important that we provide options to the individual and not provide advice. So as, you know, VR counselors, we don't want to be in the business of telling people you should do this or you should do that. It's really up to the person to make that decision. Certainly, you know, we can, you know, maybe not support something if there's a discrepancy in an individual's abilities and maybe what they want to pursue. We might be able to kind of bring that up and have a discussion, but we really shouldn't be telling people what they should and should not do. Ultimately, it should be the person that makes that decision on their own. So in addition to the career counseling and guidance, we also provide job placement services. And those are the two core services that we provide as counselors. And with job placement services, that can be a number of different things depending on, you know, the agency. Now, this varies across, you know, the state of Pennsylvania here, and this definitely varies across the nation. Here in Pittsburgh, we're very fortunate. We have a job placement department. So if you are working with a VR department that is fortunate enough to have a job placement department, they can devote a lot of time and energy to providing those services directly, as opposed to maybe an office that has fewer employees. They might be providing that job placement on their own. So they can be doing the counseling, coordinating the services, and doing the job placement, and it can be a lot for one person to do. But with the job placement department, they're going to be helping out with things like resume writing, interviewing skills, job applications, job leads. We're fortunate enough here in Pittsburgh to have job fairs. So we really provide a lot of tools for people, again, to really educate themselves, have the right resources to be able to go out, do the interviews, find the jobs, and ultimately, you know, be successful. We've also developed a lot of relationships, and I think that's very important for agencies to build relationships with employers so that they are then coming to us looking for individuals to hire. One thing that should be discussed here is public sector versus private sector. So a lot of VR programs are in the public sector. So I work for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and there are a lot of other programs, you know, across the country, you know, that are going to be in the public sector. You know, these obviously are funded by, you know, taxpayer dollars, but there are a lot of VR programs that are also in the private sector. So, you know, a hospital may have its own VR program to help its employees to maintain their job or to change careers if something has come up in their medical situation that prevents them from doing that job. You can have insurance companies. We actually sometimes will collaborate with private insurance companies and vice versa. So if an individual is receiving VR services through their insurance company, they may actually, you know, max out the amount of funding that they're receiving. And I'll talk a little bit more about services and funding. But sometimes we might have insurance companies refer to the public sector so that we can then, you know, help that individual and supplement maybe what they're not able to get through their, you know, private insurance. So another thing to, you know, differentiate here, and I'll talk about this in a little bit more detail later on, is contracted services. So I mentioned before that, you know, the two core foundational services in VR are career counseling guidance and job placement services. Those are what we provide directly as rehabilitation counselors, but we also contract out for a lot of services, and we can potentially fund for a lot of those services. And I'll talk about those in a little bit more detail. So the application process. So how does someone get involved in VR services? So there are a number of different ways. We can get referrals from the individual. They can, you know, come directly into our office. They can call in, so they don't necessarily need a referral from a doctor or anybody else. But we do get a lot of referrals from doctors, teachers, audiologists, psychologists, PTs, OTs. So pretty much anywhere someone is going to be receiving services, you know, related to some sort of disability, there's a very good chance that, you know, that organization, you know, hospital, rehabilitation facility, you know, high school, they may be making a referral on behalf of that individual for services. And as I mentioned, you know, certainly walk-ins and call-ins are certainly, you know, welcomed as well. I will say that if you're working with an individual and you want to refer them for VR services, sometimes just having them walk in or call in can be a much longer process because it has to go through a number of other different channels before it actually gets to the counselor that's going to be working with that individual. So what I always tell people is if you can find a liaison where you're working or if you have a counselor contact and you can refer directly, that's always a faster process because that way you're referring directly to the counselor. And, you know, they can often take that case and that application, and it can speed up that process and expedite things. So the application is just like, you know, any other application for services. You know, we're going to be looking at demographics. Certainly work history is very important, educational background, you know, their medical background, their goals. And sometimes people will even know the services that they need. Maybe they've had a case in the past, and they have a good idea of what they're going to be looking for, and sometimes they'll be able to put that down on the application. A really, really important part of the application process is receiving proper medical records, and if we don't have enough records, if we don't have enough information to help plan services, then we're going to probably be referring out for evaluations. Those could be, you know, neuropsychological evaluations to determine, you know, someone's cognitive ability. Those could be functional capacity evaluations to determine someone's physical ability. Those could be vocational evaluations to determine someone's ability on the job. So vocational evaluations generally will simulate different types of work environments so someone can try maybe, you know, washing dishes or working in a cash register or working in retail sales. And that helps the individual learn about themselves, whether they would like that job, whether they can do that job, and then also helps us, the counselors, try to determine, you know, if this would be a good fit for this individual and also what services we might need to put in place to help them be successful in that job. So eligibility, and I'll talk about this in a little bit more detail, but for the public sector and, you know, I'm pretty sure for the private sector as well, most VR services is going to be an eligibility-based service. And so that means that a person needs to meet certain criteria in order to be eligible for services. It is not an entitlement program. There are some individuals that, you know, may not be eligible for our services. And if that's the case, the proper thing to do is determine comparable services that might be able to help that individual and then make a referral for those services that they can then apply for. One of the most important things about the application process is the individualized plan for employment. So you can think of this almost like a contract that outlines the entire VR process. So it will outline the individual's goal. It will outline the services that the person needs to achieve that goal, whether they're being provided directly by the VR agency or if they're being provided by another organization such as, you know, an institution of higher education. It provides the time frames. So this is very important for helping both the client and the counselor determine if the individual is making progress towards their career goal. So this could be outlining the time frame for how long it would take to complete, say, a bachelor's degree. If, you know, we're thinking that the person can do that in 4 years, and if they agree that that's something that they can do in 4 years, if we outline that and it's taking them 5 years, maybe 6 years, you know, it some point, you know, after that, we're going to have to kind of revisit the plan and determine, you know, why is this person not making progress towards their goal? You know, did something happen in their life and they weren't able to, you know, continue pursuing that education? Are they struggling with math or reading? And if they are having challenges, we need to determine, one, are there services that can be put in place that can help that person, you know, overcome those barriers? Or two, have we ruled out all services, and is this perhaps maybe not the best path for this person to go down? At which point, we would have to sit down and have a conversation about where we go from here. Is this a path that you want to continue to pursue, or should we start looking at other career fields to, you know, go down that might be a better fit for that individual's abilities? So, in addition to the time frames, we definitely want to have responsibilities of both the counselor and the client. So it's a two-way street. Certainly, we as a VR agency are going to be providing services, but the client also has responsibilities as well. So this might be, you know, seeing a therapist regularly for mental health treatment. This could be, you know, completing financial aid every year for FIA and Pell through the FAFSA application. That could be making sure that they're completing driver's training. So, you know, certainly, you know, clients have to do, you know, certain things to make sure that they're utilizing all the services that are out there so that they can be successful. And if they're not, again, we would have to sit down and take a look at the plan and try and determine, you know, what can we do to try and make sure that this person is going to be successful. So the individualized plan for employment is definitely probably one of the most important pieces of documentation in the VR process. So eligibility. So as I mentioned, it's not an entitlement program, and people do have to meet certain criteria to be eligible for VR services. The first one is that they have to have a documented disability, and if they don't have a documented disability, certainly we can refer out for evaluations. The one thing that I do want to mention here that I didn't mention previously about the evaluations is that evaluations are probably the one thing that people are entitled to. Evaluations are not something that an individual has to pay for or that they can be denied. So anybody has the right to apply for services, and everybody has the right to an evaluation. So those evaluations are used for collecting information about the individual's abilities and also for documenting any, you know, disability or medical condition. So I just wanted to make that clear that people definitely are entitled to an evaluation, but not necessarily services that would follow that evaluation. So someone definitely has to have a documented disability medical condition. That could be a physical disability, that could be a cognitive disability, that could be mental health, that could be communication, vision. Really, there's no, you know, set list of, you know, what diagnosis qualifies or is a required criteria to be eligible for VR services. It's based on a functional limitation, and I will, you know, talk about that in just a minute. The one thing that I want to mention here is that there are generally two separate organizations in VR, at least in the public sector, that provide services related to vision. So the organization that I work for, we're the Bureau of Vocational Rehabilitation Services. We work with most disabilities except severe visual impairments or blindness. There is the Bureau of Blindness and Rehabilitation Services, and they handle most of those services. And they actually do a lot more than just vocational rehabilitation services. They can work with someone, you know, at a very young age if they're not of working age, and people that are not working or not seeking employment. So they do a much broader spectrum of services than what we would do Now, we can work with individuals that do have, you know, low vision or, you know, maybe blindness. It really depends on the services that they're looking for. So if someone is looking for predominantly visual services, they're going to probably want to apply through the Bureau of Blindness and Visual Rehabilitation Services. But if they're looking for something that is maybe more along the lines of a physical disability or maybe cognitive disability, they might apply through, you know, another organization. So it's really, sometimes it's less based on the disability itself and more based on the actual services they're going to be provided. And then that's going to vary from organization to organization and state to state, but it's definitely, you know, something to be aware of and something to discuss with your local organizations. So barriers to employment. So this is another key criteria that is required when someone is applying for services. So just having a diagnosed disability or a medical condition doesn't necessarily make someone automatically eligible for services. That disability has to provide, you know, a functional barrier to becoming employed. So, you know, that could be, you know, mobility barrier, that could be a communication barrier, learning, endurance, you know, self-direction, you know, a number of different things. But essentially, it has to functionally impair someone from maintaining the job that they have or, you know, gaining some sort of employment. And so the role of VR is to help remove those barriers by providing services that will help the individual become employed. Another key criteria for eligibility is that generally there have to be, you know, multiple services that need to be provided. So this may vary from state to state. Here in Pennsylvania, the way that our funding structure is set up right now, we have to provide multiple services. This is at least two, and right now it's actually switching over to at least three. So we have to provide at least three services, which means that the services that we're providing are going to be a little bit more comprehensive. This is a long-term process, which kind of leads into the next criteria, is that it has to be multiple services over at least a six-month period. And basically, this is a way of quantifying a criteria and saying that it's not a service that we're going to provide, you know, a quick service that's going to be over and done with in, you know, a couple weeks or a month or something like that. Really, this needs to be a comprehensive, long-term service to help the individual achieve, you know, the most ideal career goal. We don't want to help someone just find, you know, a quick job that's not going to be a good fit for them. You know, we want to make sure that people are getting the right services and getting the right job, so it's definitely going to be a long-term process. And sometimes that's something that we have to explain to people, that if they're just looking for job placement, if they know what kind of job they want to get, they don't really need any services, we may refer out to another community organization to help them with that job placement service, because what we're going to provide is going to be a lot more comprehensive and involved. And sometimes if people don't understand that, it can really frustrate them because it's the process is going slow and they really want to get, you know, in out there, they want to get their resume submitted, they want to get that job. So, you know, that might be a conversation that needs to be, you know, discussed. You know, are they looking for something right away, or is this something that they're going to be investing a little bit more time in so that they can be successful in the long run? So contracted services. So I talked about the job placement and the career counseling that we provide directly as counselors, but there are a lot of services that we can help coordinate and potentially fund for, and these are all services that are contracted out by other organizations. So a big one could be training and education. So here locally in Pittsburgh, you know, that might be training at Pitt or Duquesne, CCAC, which is our community college. Builders Guild is definitely a big one, trade schools, and the list really goes on. We don't really have a set list, per se, of schools that, you know, someone can go to. So we don't say to someone like, well, you have to pick from this list over here because these are the only options that you have. We usually have contracts set up with most of the local educational organizations that have been approved by the Department of Education. If there's something unique, it's not impossible, but sometimes that takes a little bit of paperwork to get something like that approved. Obviously, we have to prove that it's a viable educational organization, we want to make sure that someone is getting, you know, a good education and that, you know, it's not just, you know, a fly-by-night organization. We want to make sure that they're getting quality education. It's nationwide, too. So a lot of times people don't have to just get training and education locally. If there is a program, you know, across the country, it's very possible that a local VR program might be able to fund for that, provided that going to that school is for a very specific purpose. If there's a comparable school nearby at a lower cost, you know, that might be something that needs to be discussed. You know, why are you going to be going, you know, out of state, paying out of state tuition, you know, accruing more debt? Because, you know, sometimes there's a cap in what VR programs can pay for tuition. So people definitely have a choice to go wherever they want to go, but sometimes you have to talk a little bit about, you know, pricing, and, you know, sometimes if they go nationwide, we may not have a contract set up with somewhere that's, like, across the country, and that might make the process a little bit longer because there's more paperwork that might need to be completed. So training and education is definitely a big one. Job coaching is something that's really big as well. So if someone is pretty self-directed, they can usually get job placement services directly from their counselor or from a job placement department within a VR agency. However, if they need a little bit more one-on-one support, if they need prompting in interviews, if they need help completing an application one-on-one, chances are they may need the support of a job coach. So job coaches are individuals, they can help with people with applications, with job leads, and a big one is they can help them with prompting in interviews. So they don't necessarily do the interview for the individual, but they might give them a little prompt to help them, you know, talk about a specific area. If an employer asks an individual, say, maybe on the spectrum, what is your greatest success? They may not know what to say right away, but if the job coach maybe will prompt them and say, hey, why don't you talk about the time that you did this? They're not answering the question for the individual, but they're at least giving them a cue of what they should be talking about. And that's something that sometimes, you know, counselors and job placement, you know, counselors in a VR agency may not have the time to do, to go out to do that kind of stuff on the site. And so in those situations, we would probably contract out for job coaching. Durable medical is another big one. So if an individual needs a wheelchair or a shower chair or a prosthetic, you know, or even, you know, hearing aid to go to school or to be able to do their job, if that's not covered by an insurance company or another area where they might be able to get funding, there's a possibility that they might be able to approach a VR counselor to see if they might be able to fund for that. So I see a lot of individuals at our seating and mobility clinic here in Pittsburgh, and there are certainly things that are commonly not covered by insurance companies, but are very instrumental to an individual's independence and their functional ability on the job or at school. And so I can use that as a justification for potentially funding for those items that maybe were not covered by the insurance company. You know, certainly we have to make sure that we've ruled out all other possibilities for funding. So VR agencies are commonly known as, you know, the funder of last resort. So we have to get a denial from an insurance company. We have to see if there's funding from other organizations before we can get funding approved. So assistive technology, so that's a pretty broad term. You know, commonly that refers to a lot of computer access technology. So that can be, you know, dictation software like Dragon Naturally Speaking. That could, you know, be a hearing aid. I mean, really, you know, anything really falls under assistive technology. That can be an environmental control unit. So these are all things that we would potentially look at to remove any kind of functional barrier for someone in school or work. And these are also things that, you know, we would potentially contract out for. First, we would want to do an evaluation for, you know, a lot of these things. So for durable medical, certainly someone needs to get a wheelchair evaluation. They need to have that signed off by a doctor and an approved clinician. So, you know, VR, you know, individuals, we just can't say, oh, you need this. I think this would benefit you. In order for us to tap into funding, we have to have documentation from a professional that says that this is a needed service. Certainly, we're well educated on a lot of assistive technology, but we are not necessarily the qualified professionals to make that recommendation. We need to have that recommendation from an outside source. So home and vehicle modifications, these are also some pretty big ticket items that might be able to be funded through VR agency, and certainly these are all contracted out. So this could be a stair lift, it could even be an elevator, this could be hand controls for a vehicle, it could be a ramp into a vehicle. So we consider, you know, having an accessible home and an accessible vehicle important aspects to, you know, gaining and maintaining employment. If you're not able to get in and out of your home safely or shower or prepare for interviews, certainly, you know, that is a big issue. And not many organizations will fund for things like that. Oftentimes insurance companies are not going to fund for that. There are sometimes state waivers that people can apply for if they're eligible. But oftentimes VR is a big funding source for these types of items, and it's very, very important, especially transportation. Larger cities, you know, you're going to have paratransit or you're going to have public transportation, but once you get out into, you know, other areas where you don't have a lot of public transportation, sometimes having a personal vehicle is going to be very, very important to becoming employed. So you know, this is definitely something that we consider to be, you know, very, very instrumental to helping people maintain employment. Okay, so there is also eligibility for funding for services. So funding is based on financial need. So if we deem someone to be eligible for core services, then they would be able to receive career counseling and job placement at no cost to them. However, if they're going to need a contracted service, we need to determine if they're going to be financially eligible for that service. So it's based on income. It's also based on household income commonly. So if an individual is working, there is a chance that they may have a, I often say deductible, because it's a nice analogy with the way that insurance companies work. So if someone's working and they're earning an income, we'll take a look at that income, see what it is, and if it's at a certain level, they may have to pay, say, $1,000 or $2,000, I'm just throwing a random number out there, before VR can potentially fund for the rest of that. So let's take a vehicle modification, for example. Let's say the person's working, and they're working full-time, and they may have to pay, say, you know, $2,000 out of pocket towards these vehicle modifications. Once they meet that, then VR might be able to cover the remaining balance for that. Some organizations may have a cap on how much they provide. Some organizations may not. Here in Pittsburgh, it depends on the type of service. We certainly have caps on education. We have caps on, you know, other services that we might be able to provide. Sometimes, you know, we don't necessarily have a cap for things like durable medical or vehicle modifications because they can be so pricey. We don't really want to stick the bill with the individual and have them not be able to get that service. But the important takeaway is here that sometimes people may have to contribute you know, potentially sizable, you know, deductible towards a service before they can access VR funding. And depending on the cost of the service, they may not be eligible at all. So if it's for, say, you know, Dragon Naturally Speaking, which is a relatively inexpensive service compared to what can be provided, it might be a couple hundred dollars. You know, if the person has a $1,000 deductible, it may very well cover all of that, and they may not be eligible for any funding from VR. So it varies from household to household, individual to individual. Now, if they are receiving Social Security benefits, whether that's supplemental security insurance or Social Security disability insurance, that puts them into a separate category. Generally, in those situations, a person may not have any out-of-pocket deductible to contribute because we consider to be their income. We consider their income to be zero. We don't necessarily count the income that they're getting from those benefits. And so in those situations, those individuals are often eligible for, you know, more funding, and that's definitely a beneficial thing. Now, there are waivers slash appeals. We call them waivers. It might be called appeals somewhere else. But the point is, if someone feels that they need a particular service and they've been told that that service cannot be provided, they can then potentially appeal that. So, for example, if someone has an out-of-pocket deductible and, you know, VR says, you know, you have to pay this before we can do the vehicle modifications, if they say, well, you know, I've had a lot of medical expenses and, you know, I have debt from this and I'm paying off that, and on paper it may say that I'm able to pay for this, but in reality I'm just not really able to come up with this money to pay for this service, which I really need to be able to do my job. In those types of situations, a waiver or an appeal can be requested. They're not always approved, but certainly we will take a look at that person's situation on a case-by-case basis, and if there's a good justification, there's a possibility that that policy may be overturned. Okay, so right now I think might be a good time to talk a little bit about a case study. Actually, before I do the case study, this isn't in the slides, but I think this is an important thing to mention. So just for the whole kind of like how the whole cycle of services works. So we have the application process, we have the eligibility process, we have service provision, and then eventually the cases will be closed. So we consider a case to be successful if a person has received all the necessary services and they've been working for at least 90 days. We don't want to just close a case on someone and say, you know, you're working, you know, see you later, this case is going to be closed now. We want to make sure everything is going smoothly, no additional services need to be provided, and if it is agreed by client and counselor that everything is going well, that case would then be closed. Oftentimes it's not a one-time, you know, shot where a person can only use VR services once in a lifetime. So things come up, medical situations change, life situations change, and so it may be that a person's case is closed for the time being, and if something changes in the future, they can apply for services again. So that sometimes needs to be a conversation that needs to be had with individuals, that we don't keep cases open indefinitely just for the what-if situations. We close them out if things are going well, and if they potentially need services in the future, they can always reapply. So I just wanted to state that there because I thought that was important. Okay, so let's talk about this case study here. So we have an individual with spinal cord injury, TA-HA, which means that that individual doesn't have any sensation or function from the ribcage down, which means that they are a full-time manual wheelchair user. That's their primary means of mobility. And they were referred by a rehabilitation facility. The person has a high school education. They are a recipient of SSI, and their career goal is to become a VR counselor. So what services are they going to need? They're definitely going to need education, because you cannot be a VR counselor with just a high school education. So education is a primary service. They're going to need durable medical equipment. There's a possibility that the chair that they have may not be sufficient for them, or that they need, you know, something on the chair that's maybe not covered by an insurance company. They're going to need driver's training. They're going to need to be able to drive independently. Where this person is, there is not public transportation, and paratransit maybe would not necessarily be a viable option. It's a possible option, but if a person is going to school, they may have, you know, irregular schedules, they might have to stay and work late in a lab, they might have to do group projects together, and with paratransit, you have to usually notify them, you know, 24 hours in advance, and it's a very, you know, rigid window of pickup and drop-off. So, you know, driving, you know, for educational purposes is usually, you know, a pretty good justification. and they're also going to need vehicle modifications. So since the person has, you know, a complete spinal cord injury, they're not going to be able to use, you know, standard gas and brake, and they'll need hand controls to be able to operate that vehicle so that they can get back and forth to school. Okay, so the individual seems to meet the MSD criteria. So MSD is a term that we use locally for most significantly disabled, which basically means that someone meets all of the criteria that we talked about earlier. The person has a disability, they have significant barriers to employment, they require multiple services, and those services are going to be provided over at least a 6-month period. And so they are definitely eligible for the core services of counseling and job placement. And since they receive SSI, they're potentially also eligible for some funding for some of the other contract services that we mentioned. So for the driving evaluation, as I mentioned before, evaluations are usually services that are, you know, covered. Someone doesn't necessarily have to pay out of pocket for something like that, even if they would normally have to pay out of pocket for, you know, other services. Evaluations are usually considered, you know, information gathering, and generally someone does not have to pay for that. So it's not covered by insurance, so VR funds for the driving evaluation to determine, one, is this person able to drive? And if so, what kind of, you know, modifications are they going to need to be able to drive safely? So VR covers the eval, they cover the training, and they cover the hand controls. Hand controls are generally about $1,500 installed, provided there's no other modifications needed, like a ramp or electronic controls for the vehicle. Training could, you know, vary, you know, depending on the individual. That could be a one-time training session. That could be a multiple-time training session, depending on how much assistance they need acclimating to the hand controls or other modifications that they might need. So the individual is going to need a wheelchair. So the frame is going to be covered by insurance, but there are items that are not covered by insurance that, you know, VR would potentially be able to fund for. So in this case, it would be natural fit hand rims. So if you're not familiar with these are ergonomically designed hand rims that the individual uses to push their wheelchair. Standard hand rims are very tubular shaped, and they can be difficult to grasp onto. And you have to squeeze very hard, and it can definitely result in repetitive stress injuries. However, the natural fit hand rims can help reduce the pain that someone may already have and also reduce future injuries. And sometimes these aren't covered by insurance companies, so this is something that is going to be covered by, you know, VR. So the vehicle modifications, the person must be able to purchase their own vehicle. That is something that VR would not be able to do. They would not be able to purchase an entire vehicle for someone. Depending on the modifications they're going to be receiving, they may have to get a vehicle that's, you know, under 50,000 miles. That's something common locally here that our installers who install the hand controls say that if we're installing ramps and lowering floors and we're putting, say, $30,000 worth of technology in a vehicle, we're not going to do that on a vehicle that has 200,000 miles on it. It's going to have to be a relatively new vehicle and generally under 50,000 miles. Sometimes for minor modifications, you know, if it's just a bolt-on type of modification, like a mirror or a hand control or a spinner knob or something like that, sometimes there's a little bit of leeway with the mileage in a vehicle. But sometimes that can be a barrier for someone. If they need to buy a relatively new vehicle to get those hand controls on, that could be a pretty pricey ticket for an individual. But that's still something that they have to purchase on their own. So for this individual, they purchased the vehicle on their own. A minivan was identified as the best option for the individual. There's no real set list of vehicles that a person has to get. It's usually what's up for them, what's best for them. It has to be recommended by an adaptive driving specialist, and that's the CDRS. So a person just can't say, oh, you know, I want these hand controls. You know, I passed my driving test, and this is what I want. Just like anything else, like a wheelchair, it has to be signed off by a professional in order for VR to fund for that. and in this case it would be the CDRS, recommended hand controls for the individual. So in that situation, you know, VR would pay for that. Education. So this is one of the things that I mentioned, that, you know, there could potentially be a cap for this, for your local VR organization. Here in Pittsburgh, we have about 2,500 on average is our cap for an individual situation, and we can do that for 8 semesters. So certainly depending on what school they go to, that would certainly leave a lot left over for the individual to pay for, and whether that's going to be covered with other grants or if they cover that with loans, it is something that they're going to have to be able to cover, because VR will not be able to pay the full amount. Definitely helps. Every little bit helps for education. And then job placement. So once the individual has their training and education, they've got the durable medical that they need, they've got the transportation that they need, now they're ready to go out and find that job, and this is when job placement comes into play. So they might need assistance with the resume, they might need assistance with hiring incentives. So this could be something to ask about as well. Are there any hiring incentives that VR might be able to offer an employer? For example, we have an incentive here where we can offer employers a certain amount of wage reimbursement if they were to hire one of our clients, and sometimes that's a way to tip the scales a little bit. Certainly, there is still some discrimination for individuals with disabilities. It's not as prevalent as what it once was, but certainly, you know, that can even be out there unconsciously. So sometimes if we're able to offer a hiring incentive, sometimes that can help tip the scales in favor of one of our clients. And so that can certainly be something to take a look at. Okay, so what can you do as service providers? So I think the important thing to take away here is that if you're working with an individual, VR services may very well be a service that can benefit this person. And if you're working for an organization, try and find out if you have a liaison. Certainly, having a liaison is the quickest way to refer someone for services, and it's going to be less of a hassle, you know, for the individual that you're working with, because they'll be able to apply directly to the counselor, and that will expedite services for that person. If you don't have a liaison, try and find out if you can get one. So that can work a couple different ways. You might be able to have a liaison that comes to your site on a regular basis. So I go to the hospital a couple times a week, and just fortunate to be very close to the hospital to be able to do that. If you're not able to get a liaison that's actually able to come out on site, maybe that can just be a contact person for you. Maybe that is someone that you can just get their phone number from the local office, and that's someone that you can call up directly if you want to make a referral, or maybe have the people that you're working with call that person directly. So whether you have someone on site or if you have someone that you're able to call up, that can really, really expedite things for people. Otherwise, if they have to call the office, there are definitely a lot of hoops that they might have to jump through, and quite unfortunately, sometimes that might discourage people and they may not end up pursuing services. So as I mentioned before, you know, VR services are in every state, and they're generally assigned by county. So, you know, try and figure out what office serves the county that you work in or that your client might live and work in, and that way you can usually try and figure out what offices are going to be assigned. Okay. So that is the bulk of my presentation. Hopefully that gave you a pretty good overview of rehabilitation services. Again, they're going to vary from, you know, state to state, even office to office. Every office will have their own policy on certain things, so it's important to kind of get to know those individuals, the policies, and learn a little bit about those policies and why they're in place so that you can help your individual advocate for services. So now, if there are any questions, I think this is a good time for an FAQ.
All right, so we have time for just a couple of questions, and I think we will post a larger FAQ document following the presentation, but for the time being, we'll just fit a couple of them in. First question, how will applying for OVR affect my SSA benefits?
Okay, so that's a really good question. I often get that a lot. So applying for OVR will not affect Social Security benefits at all. Working, however, does. And so that's what I often tell people. Just by applying to OVR, it's not going to necessarily, I say OVR, that's our local term for Office of Vocational Rehabilitation, but applying for VR services won't necessarily just impact, you know, benefits. So if they apply for VR services, they're not going to lose benefits, their benefits aren't going to get reduced. One thing to keep in mind, however, is that if they do sign up for benefits, Social Security Administration will monitor their progress through the VR process. So if they're not making progress towards a career goal, that could potentially impact their benefits. But as far as reducing cash benefits, that's generally not affected until someone starts working. So that's usually what I tell people, and I often refer people out for, you know, benefits counseling. We do have a local organization here that provides the benefits counseling so that when someone starts working, they know, are their cash benefits going to go down right away like they do with supplemental security insurance, or are they going to have a trial work period like they would if they're on Social Security disability benefits. So short answer is applying for VR won't necessarily affect your Social Security benefits, but working will.
All right. Quick question here. How old do you have to be to apply for VR services?
Okay. So generally, the quick answer is of working age. So we do have a new program here in Pittsburgh, and this may be something that is, you know, across the state and across the nation as well. We are probably not going to start taking applications until an individual is probably, you know, 16, 17, you know, close to that working age. However, it doesn't mean that they can't be involved in VR services a little bit early on. We actually have a program, it's called our Early Reach Program, where we're meeting with high school students as early as their freshman year so that we can talk with them about what VR services are, how they work, how they can apply, so then when it comes time to application, they can be, you know, better informed on how that process works and that there are no surprises and they understand how that's going to go. There's no real age cap, so I often say if someone is willing and able to work, then we will generally, you know, be able to work with them. So I've worked with individuals well into their 70s, and they're still working successfully, but they just need some services to help maintain that job. So there's no specific number to put on there, but they do have to be of legal age to work.
All right, we have time for just one more question here. So will employers see my evaluations and medical records?
Okay. So that's another question that I get quite a bit. And what I tell my clients is that, no, your employers will not see any of this information. Everything that we collect is confidential. I keep everything under lock and key in my filing cabinet. And the only time we release any information is with a release of information signed by the client that says, I would like to release this specific information to this specific entity for this specific purpose. So when I tell people that they're signing these forms, it's not that I'm going to release your entire life history, it's for a very specific purpose. So we may release information to an evaluator based on, say, you know, a previous evaluation, maybe we're releasing school records, but this is all going to be approved by the client prior to any information being released. And generally, we do not release any information to employers unless it is very specifically asked by the clients.
All right. That's our time. So thank you all for tuning in. If you have additional questions that are not answered in our FAQ document, you can contact Brian using this information here. Once again, thank you to Brian for his presentation here, and thank you all for tuning in.